There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic? It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not?
We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at a world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Waddell, and I'm your host. Today, John Anderson is here. He's got his microscope, so we're ready for the examination. We're going to talk a little bit about what the AM broadcasters want to do to our FM band, and other stuff going on in Washington. We're going to go freeform today. You will enjoy it. Stay tuned. Hey, John, welcome aboard.
Yeah, thanks. This is what rappers must feel like when they're just asked to freestyle at the mic.
Well, you know, this one will be Media Geek featuring, you know, John Anderson of DIYmedia.net, yeah. You know.
So that's great.
maybe we can get someone else, Farrell, to produce or something.
Yeah, great, wonderful.
So you've apparently drawn the ire of Clear Channel Communications.
Yeah, I'm not making friends at Clear Channel. Clear Channel does not like me very much.
I can't
much.
Imagine how that would possibly happen.
No, well, it all boils down to this crazy cockamamie idea that the National Association of Broadcasters initially put forward, some 6 to 8 months ago, where they basically petitioned the FCC and said, you know, look, the AM dial is degrading very quickly.
And they had nothing to do with that.
No. The AM dial is degrading very quickly. There are too many stations on the air, given the amount of spectrum involved. There are all these new sources of interference that plague the ability for people to receive a crystal clear, static-free AM signal. Which is kind of a misnomer, because I don't think I've ever received a crystal clear AM signal in my life, but maybe I'm just too young to remember the days of yore. Basically said that, you know, local AM broadcasters, especially independent local AM broadcasters, are some of the most financially distressed broadcasters in the entire
industry.
Again,
Clear Channel had nothing to do with that either.
No, absolutely not. But this is a problem that plagues AM radio in general. And the solution to fixing that problem is not to change the regulations dealing with the AM band or get the FCC to possibly take concerns of interference involving garden variety sources like the new LED display traffic lights. You know, traffic lights that use light-emitting diodes put out frequencies that, if you drive underneath them when you're listening to an AM station, completely kill your reception of the AM station. Hair dryers, electric motors. You know, instead of addressing concerns like that, what the FCC needs to do is give each AM radio station access to the FM dial so that they can run chains of FM translator stations that not only rebroadcast the AM signal during the day, but would allow them to originate their own programming at night when, you know, especially the lower end AM stations have to go off the air, like at sunrise or sunset, given the propagation nature of AM broadcasting. So effectively, what the NAB is asking for is a spectral handout for AM broadcasters to get access to the FM spectrum and run chains of translators. Does any of this sound familiar at all? We went through something very similar like this in 2003 when religious broadcasters made a rush for translator stations as a way to increase their own constituent.
And translators
are
low-powered stations,
yes,
whose job it is to only rebroadcast another station. And interestingly, under the rules, are permitted to be spaced closer together on the dial than low-power FM stations, which originate programming
and
for
the
communities
and, local,
and
yes,
are live and local. And apparently the NAB also sees no inherent paradox in that situation.
No, I mean, letting commercial AM radio stations originate programming on FM translators would not somehow fundamentally warp the FM translator system and basically make them extra superpowered commercial LPFM stations. Not by the NAB's imagination at all. So they filed this cockamamie petition last year. And over Christmas break, you know, when I got plenty of free time and have nothing better to do than to go through rulemaking minutia, I filed a 9-page letter, a comment letter in this proposal with the FCC, basically laying out the reasons why I thought it was complete and utter BS. The first one is that it completely twists the idea of what a translator station is. If a translator station is only supposed to be used to supplement another broadcaster and they're not supposed to originate programming, then if the NAB wants to change those rules all around, then why don't we just combine LPFM and translators together? You know, make LPFM stations be able to broadcast up to 250 watts. Allow them to network together. Allow them to run commercials. You know, why not just do that instead of having this artificial political distinction between the two? That was my first argument. The second one is tied into that. You know, the NAB in 2006, they filed this petition. They said, and I'm quoting, "Enabling AM stations to use FM translators would be a logical extension of the commission's longstanding efforts to support and improve the AM service by cleaning up interference on the band." So by giving stations access to other spectrum, you're cleaning up interference on a spectrum you're not touching.
That's kind of like cleaning up a neighborhood by raising all the houses and moving people out.
Yes, we had to destroy the village in order to save it.
Yeah.
Now, in 2007, Dennis Wharton, the National Association of Broadcasters Executive Vice President of Media Relations, said when the FCC decided to possibly expand the low-power FM service and make low-power FM stations more important in their eyes relative to translators, he said, and I'm quoting, "The idea that hundreds, if not thousands, of additional LPFM stations can be shoehorned into an overcrowded radio dial without causing considerable interference simply defies the laws of physics." Now, same organization taking two complete sides. I guess it depends on whose foot is going into the shoe as to whether or not this is shoehorning or not. Thirdly, I said that this proposal doesn't increase the increasing degradation of the AM dial. Just by giving AM stations FM translators doesn't mean that traffic lights are going to screw up your ability to actually get an AM signal in your car, or that your neighbor's hairdryer won't screw up your ability, or your computer won't screw up your ability to be able to receive an AM signal. These are things not addressed at all in this proposal, and so actually it doesn't really address the problem. And then finally I said, this is a very clever way to give AM broadcasters access to FM digital broadcast booty.
Yes, because then they can have multiple streams and other data services, which they can't do on AM band because there's not enough bandwidth.
You can't multicast on AM. You can't offer data casting on AM. The only thing you can do is make a slightly better signal out of it,
which is in itself causing lots of other problems.
They've started rolling
part
out
of the
AM
interference
HD.
Problem. In fact,
yes, part of the interference problem on the AM dial is due to stations adopting the digital mode, and large station owners like Cox and Citadel Broadcasting are no longer broadcasting their AM stations in digital at night because the problem is so bad.
It was contributing to additional hash and interference and noise on the band.
Yeah. So I laid out all these things basically saying you're not fixing the problem. You're essentially giving incumbents more spectrum, and you really need to start thinking about what your public is when you're talking about public interest. You've committed to resolving all issues involving LPFM first. You've committed to possibly overhauling the difference between LPFM stations and translators to make LPFM stations more important. You need to take care of all these issues before you even go with something as stupid as this. But really, you should take this petition, dismiss it, and use the concerns raised about the degradation of the AM band to do something to fix the degradation of the AM band. I mean, it seemed like common sense to me. So earlier this month, Clear Channel files a reply comment, which in essentially attacks two of my premises. The first one is that AM broadcasters will not rush to get as many translator stations as they want.
Oh, they won't.
Oh, absolutely not.
And we know this because they took a pledge. This is a promise. Has it been signed, sealed, and delivered?
They said that they would, the NAB actually said that stations should get as many as five.
Five
translators per station.
So when you look at a radio dial, let's say like Champaign-Urbana, just along, which has about four or five AM stations in the area, that would be 15 additional FM stations.
20, yeah, something like that.
And if you go to some place like Chicago, you're talking about 30
yeah.
to 40.
Now, in the urban areas, Clear Channel makes this point, in the urban areas, there aren't a lot of space for FM translators anyway.
It's
so
true.
So this is something that's going to help the suburban stations and the rural stations especially. But it's still a spectrum grab by incumbents. And there have been a lot of local independent rural AM broadcasters who are filing comments in this proceeding saying, yeah, this is a good idea because our signal is getting killed. And it's getting killed by the big boys out of the cities, plus all these other interference problems. And so they desperately want it. And the NAB is using the mom and pop station as cover to advance this agenda. But the fact that it came out of the NAB directly makes me suspicious as to its real motives, and that's why I brought up the whole digital idea. Now, the Clear Channel addresses the fact that they don't think there's going to be a 2000-style 3 rush to translators, and they question my doomsday scenario. But they've left the premise of my argument completely untouched, which I think usually means...
We don't have an answer.
We don't have an answer, or if we just ignore this, maybe it will go away.
But they did address you directly.
Yes.
It was your comment. It wasn't just the general principle.
Anderson comments at blah blah is down in the footnotes. It makes me feel... See, us policy wonks, we live for stuff like this.
Now, if you look through the agglomerated comments...
Yes, it's a really depressing situation, actually, because most petitioners are filing in support of allowing AM stations to use FM translators. This, except for three main parties. The first one is National Public Radio, who is worried that there would be a massive rush for translators by commercial stations, which would impact their ability to put to daisy chain their own translator networks and increase their own coverage.
Right, and that's why, one of the reasons why NPR was against low-power FM to begin with,
yes,
back in the late 90s, because of their heavy use of translator stations, especially out west
and, yeah, in the mountainous areas.
So. Yeah.
Okay, so they're fundamentally opposed to the idea, but have put a lot of caveats on it, like, well, if the FCC is going to do this, they should phase it in. They should make sure that they don't auction off or give away anything that's in the non-commercial part of the band, 88.1 to 91.9. That's our turf. Don't let commercial broadcasters in there. CBS Radio, surprisingly enough, which says, as I have, this doesn't do anything to fix degradation on the AM dial. Maybe we should consider fixing the AM
and
situation
first. And I think CBS
first.
May owns a lot of AM properties.
CBS owns several of the largest, as they call it, Clear Channel, 50,000 watt, 24 hours a day.
Yeah, like in New York.
Yeah, in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles. They own large broadcast properties, and they're not necessarily in favor of
this. Well, because with those Clear Channel stations, I mean, they're hitting territories of hundreds, if not thousands, of miles. They would benefit much more from cleaning up the AM band than they would ever benefit by having piddly little translators.
Yeah. And the third organization that's been most opposed to this is the Prometheus Radio Project.
Right.
Who is fighting for the preservation of FM spectrum for low-power FM radio stations. No one is taking a blanket no approach to this. There have been so many comments filed by so many little broadcasters and by so many state broadcasters associations and by people like Clear Channel and CBS that the writing is on the wall. Also, at last year's NAB radio convention, a media bureau staffer came to the convention and said, hey guys, why don't you start applying for what they call special temporary authority to put these translator stations
on
the air.
We did talk about that.
With the idea that this rulemaking is going to be approved. See, it's what policy wonks call the creation of facts on the ground. If you implement the policy unofficially, then you can point to it and say, look, it's causing no harm. Let's just adopt it formally. And that's going on right now. Okay. So the writing, politically reality speaking, is on the wall. AM radio stations are going to get FM translators. The question is, how many are they going to get? And when are they going to get them? Who is going to get the first crack at the very small sliver of FM spectrum left that's usable? Right now, the first people that are getting a crack at it are the full-power non-commercial FM filers that filed for new licenses earlier on, or later last year. The second people who are supposed to get a crack at it are LPFM broadcasters. The FCC, when it adopted its latest rulemaking on LPFM, pledged that the next FM filing window it would open would be for low-power FM radio stations. So, at best, AM broadcasters are third in line. Officially, technically,
and as the territory is very quickly whittling away, even in some of the most rural areas, the amount of spectrum available is going way down.
The whole thing, and the reason why there is such a large fight over this, does not make a lot of sense to me unless you actually put it in the context of digital broadcasting.
Right. Because the whole aim right now of the radio industry is really to get out of the radio business.
Right. To use the spectrum and repurpose it for other purposes that don't have anything to do with the provision of audio, free audio. And you can't do that on the AM dial. The AM dial is worthless for that kind of activity. So, and AM broadcasters have been complaining about HD radio and its protocols and potentials for years now. And the fact that the National Association of Broadcasters introduced this proposal makes me think that there's been some, you know, this is a way of trying to build bridges back to get the AM and broadcasters on the same page, advancing HD radio as the preordained technology. If the AM broadcasters who felt shafted by the adoption of this half-assed proprietary technology can actually get access to some of its good features using FM translators, then maybe they'll stop bitching.
But I wonder about the problems that could come with that, because, I mean, the biggest criticism of HD radio is that it expands the bandwidth of an FM station. And if you take a translator, which is by its very nature closer together on the dial, and then expand its bandwidth with the HD signal, isn't now the NAB going to be responsible for potentially creating some of that interference that it claimed exists with low-power FM stations, but turning it into a reality?
Yes, but there are two potential caveats to that reasoning, which your reasoning is completely correct, but I'm speaking as an NAB devil advocate here. Okay, the first one is that digital radio is quote-unquote redundant, meaning that the way that the signal is broadcast is on both sides of the analog signal.
Right,
there's two sidebands. So if one station on one side of station X broadcasting in HD has interference from a neighbor to its right, the signal on the left-hand side of station X's transmission will get through, and then there will still be a digital signal that's receivable in HD.
But what
radio
if you have it on both sides?
Well, you know,
you
then
get them crammed in.
Then
there,
you know, we're gonna have to, you know, there's magic in the algorithm of the
right
HD thing that's gonna fix it, and we'll look down the future and we'll program it to be more robust to that. Secondly, there is a plan afoot that the NAB will be presenting to the FCC within the near future to allow HD radio broadcasters to up the power of their digital sidebands by 10 decibels.
That's a massive increase.
Yes. Right now,
I mean, because I think you need to point out to people that decibels, 10 decibels doesn't sound like a lot. They look at VU meters. But every 3 decibels is a doubling of power.
Right.
And that's a tripling of power.
Yeah, at about right now, digital sidebands are broadcast at about 20 decibels, or I think like a hundredth of a time. Of the power of the analog signal.
Right, right.
So if a station's running 1,000, or like WEFT runs a 10,000 watt signal, we could run like 100 watts of HD radio. Mm-hmm. So it's like 1,000th of what the analog transmission is. Effectively doubling that, the idea is to increase the digital coverage area, but it's going to come at the expense of increased interference to the analog.
Right, right.
Right? So, again, we're at a situation where the NAB appears to be destroying the village in order to save it. We'll sacrifice analog quality to improve digital robustness. And the final thing that they would say is that, well, when stations go all digital and all the spectrum is devoted to just digital information, this interference problem will be moot because we'll have a huge swath that we can deal with.
Right, when everyone's done buying their digital TVs, they're just going to go ahead and buy all their digital radios
and when,
now?
Yeah, and when Ubiquiti actually develops the box that will be a digital transmitter, they've only got one prototype. It's been tested once in Ohio. You know, the technology is not there. They're selling you vaporware.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that all of this is happening within the context of digital radio and the way it is stumbling as far as broadcast adoption and marketplace adoption is going, I can't think of any other logical explanation. And even my explanation is somewhat illogical. I know that the folks like at Prometheus and things like that don't buy my, you know, they think I'm a conspiracy theorist and the pessimist at the party. They don't buy my logic on this, but I can't think of any other explanation that would make sense.
I mean, exactly. I mean, I think you look at it and look at it, a particular AM broadcaster, and you under, and I would really ask, why would you want an additional FM signal? I mean, really, either you have to ask that question, because if you're Clear Channel, if you're any one of these major clusters, you have AM and FM stations in your portfolio most of the time, not exclusively, but you know you have those opportunities already in front of you in a lot of ways. Additionally, if you have an AM and FM, you can run the AM signal on your iBoc additional channels. Granted, that means you're only getting to a very tiny, tiny percentage of radio listeners, because very few people have digital receivers at this point, but you do have this multicast capability. But as we all know, it's about spectrum.
Right.
I mean, it is, and spectrum is the land of the airwaves.
Right.
And the more you hold, right? The more you hold, the more power you have, the more ability you have to create revenue.
Right.
And so my question is, on these translators, is this going to be spectrum which is going to be simply allocated for free to the AM broadcast, or is this going to be auctioned off?
That is a very good question, because there have been no, I mean, if you're filing for an FM translator, you have to file the commercial grade application fee. You know, to file for a non-commercial license with the FCC is free. To file for an application for a commercial radio station, you have to pay a significant amount of money for engineering fees and things like that. But also to the FCC, it's like...
But that's not rent. That's really just covering all the procedural issues.
Then again, Paul, we're not dealing with new spectrum.
Right.
Right. So I doubt that the FCC would move to an auction method for this unless there were two competitors in the market that wanted the same translator frequency. Clear Channel and CBS both go for translator 96.7 in market Y. Then it would default to an auction, but that would be handled on a case-by-case basis. Since we're not dealing with an opening of brand new spectrum that's untouched virgin land, we're basically dealing with the crumbs of the FM spectrum here. Auctions would only come into play if there were competitors for a specific transaction.
And then meanwhile, you know, we're still waiting for legislation that would restore low-power FM and allow...
technical parity to translators.
Yeah, exactly. To happen, and it doesn't seem to be getting anywhere. Congress is a little bit busy with sending us $600 checks and things like that.
Right, yeah. The idea is that, at least within the public interest community, I think, is that... The FCC has already approved to give us next crack at the FM dial, to take more spaces on the FM dial, so we'll take it. The FCC hasn't said when that's going to happen, and chances are they're not going to do it anytime soon, so we'll keep that as a hold card. Like, everything else follows this card. So in some ways, it's almost politically good that there is no LPFM filing window right now, because as long as that commitment stays in place and isn't executed on, no one else can get the spectrum, right? So if they can hold the FCC to that commitment and then work on Congress to get the legislation passed to restore technical parity between LPFM stations and translators, they probably want to get that legislation enacted into law, get the FCC to change the rules, and then open the filing window. Because then they can maximize the number of LPFM stations they get, right? Whether that's going to happen in that sequence of events
is anybody's
guess.
It's a little bit like a game of mousetrap.
Right. And there are literally, you know, there's literally like three people working on this issue for us in Capitol Hill. And there's one person working on this issue for us at the FCC, stacked up against armies of industry lobbyists who would like to screw up this very... you know, impressively thought out and well detailed strategy that is literally held together by string.
Well, I mean, certainly the NAB would like to see this AM translator thing come through before the election,
right?
And certainly before January of 2009, when we'll see it's likely we'll see a new FCC chairman. I don't know what would happen under a President McCain, since he's starting to look like the de facto Republican nominee here.
Yeah.
Since he has been a friend to Low Power FM during his time in the Senate, having, you know, co-sponsored, co-authored bills to restore Low Power FM, I wonder if he would, one, retain a Chairman Martin.
I doubt it.
And then, two, if he would be willing to sign legislation restoring Low Power FM, and how that would screw things up.
Well, you have to remember back when the Senate voted on the bill that officially eviscerated the Low Power FM service by creating these technical distinctions that made it harder to place LPFM stations on the dial, Senator McCain, who 2 years before that hated micro radio, thought it was a half-baked idea, got up on the floor of the Senate and gave this very impassioned speech where he effectively apologized to the American public and the constituencies who are going to be disenfranchised by the Radio Broadcasting
and
Preservation
And he continued to push
Act.
It even while he was chair of the committee.
Yeah, I mean, he is a supporter of that. So I think that's definitely a possibility now.
And then, if we have a Democratic president, we'll see a different FCC then, too, obviously.
Sure. Chairman Copps will be going hardcore to get that.
You've studied FCC history. We only got a couple minutes here, but a quick question to you is, though, if the FCC were to sometime this year go ahead and put this AM translator thing through, how likely would it be to be reversed? Or is that just simply someplace that the FCC doesn't generally go?
It's similar to, I guess, the quick answer for you on that would be, look at what happened in 2003. There was this massive rush of speculation for translator stations. The FCC started processing the applications basically automatically.
Yeah.
And by the time they recognized there was a problem, the majority of the spectrum was already gone.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't figure that they would actually revoke any licenses. They don't tend to do that sort of thing.
So reversal after the execution of an FCC rule that gives away spectrum really doesn't mean anything, and is something the FCC historically has been loath to not do.
And what if it turns out, though, that they're still waiting to have the opening, to have the filing opening? Do you think that could get canceled?
This could be something that could end up in the FCC's perpetual circular file, yes.
Yes. And just sort of swept under the rug more than anything else.
Yeah,
then.
Unless the NAB decides to raise a big stink about it and force the issue. But as we've kind of found out over the past couple of years, the NAB is back to its old reputation of not being able to lobby itself out of a paper bag, as someone once put
it. Well, I wonder if the funding isn't the way it used to be, you know, since Clear Channel's been taken private and, all the large radio broadcasters in particular have not been having the banner years they had some 5 to 7 years ago.
Yeah, you don't know, but their reputation on Capitol Hill is definitely not as stellar and as muscular as it has been in the past.
Darn. We will all shed a collective tear for the National Association of Broadcasters on that one. Well, John, I think we got a better sense of what's going on here.
Well, yeah, if we just wonked out for half an hour. Thanks for letting me do that.
Hey, that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. But I think it's important that we reframe this issue away from just, if people think about it simply as radio, I think you put that into your blinders on and you fail to see the import of spectrum, since spectrum equals bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
And that these are all, it is all becoming much more about data,
yep,
and becoming much more about access,
yep,
and less about public service.
It will be
every
very
single
interesting to
month
see
down the line
whether or not radio as we know it exists within 10 to 20 years, literally.
John Anderson of DIYmedia.net. This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho,
KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kasilof in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.